WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively post-draft right now. I do want to give a shout-out to our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. They're putting on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be having some crab cakes at Conrad's Crabs on Friday the 6th. In Perry Hall, and the Crab Cake Tour is going to go everywhere in May and June. Then we're doing 31 and in August. This guy would introduce me to some good deep dish pizza out there in Illinois, and I was out there last week, but he was a little detained doing draft stuff. He is a draft insider and does as well on the report cards of people. You guys have people to grade you now. It's hilarious. We have people that mock the mock drafts. Eric Edholm is here, our defending champion, to discuss how the Ravens get the A-plus grade, I guess. I don't, you know, the grading of these things is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is your life, dude. So, like, as much as my relationship with Phil Savage or Eric DaCosta or Joe Ortiz goes back 25 years,
yep.
This is sort of where you cut your teeth in that Kuiper Mayock space of looking at all these kids going to senior bowls, doing all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're my first call here on the post. How did we do, Eric? Did we do okay?
You did as well as the Ravens typically do. Very, very well, I think. I mean, you know, again, like, as you pointed out, I mean, this has all become sort of postmodern, right? Graders for the grade or grades for the graders, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I what I do is then when I do my immediate gut reaction, post-draft grades, I link to past grades as well so that I'm held accountable, right? I mean, I gave the Cowboys a bad grade and Micah Parsons was amazing last year. You know, I mean, you can miss on one or two picks and it'll mess everything up. So I want people to realize I fully understand that this is somewhat ridiculous what we do, but I do study it pretty hard. I do put a lot of time and energy into it. I don't have any biases. I don't have a favorite team or a least favorite team. And I just try to give what I think are, you know, reasonable takes and perspectives on the players. But just looking up and down their class, you know, like I always pick a favorite pick of each team's group and then a least favorite. I was struggling for a least favorite. I think I ended up on Isaiah Likely, and I don't hate the kid at all. He may end up being Ed Dixon, you know, pretty good player. So I just thought that one interesting thing that stood out, and maybe you've heard similar, but you know, coming into the draft, the Ravens, you know, had all these, you know, fourth and fourth round picks, and everybody was saying, oh, you know, they're not going to keep all those. Well, they kind of did, you know, and they just accumulated a lot of depth at maybe what was the sweet spot of the draft. So I give them a hearty thumbs up, I think.
Well, there's some things that I get in the aftermath here. And, you know, I've been watching this forever as well, as you well know. By the way, They're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Super Bowl 35 team in the 22nd year
cool.
In May. So they're doing a whole thing. So, I mean, going back, because you wrote about the 96 Ravens, kind of famously wrote the running story of how strange a place it was and what it still begat. I mean, like,
yeah.
Literally, this draft tradition of Eric DaCosta and Ozzie Newsome is still sort of there. This is where I stand on this, that if I would have been with Eric in, let's say, January, let's say when he went down to visit with Bisciotti down in Jupiter to have the state of mm-hmm. what they're going to do and who they're going to try to sign and where they're going to allocate their money. And Steve's really into this, right? Like when Steve's engaged with the Ravens, this is the most fun part for him because
yeah.
he is a human resources guy. He likes picking people. If I would have said to Eric, you're going to get on April 29th, you're going to wake up. And you're going to have the center from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have the safety from Notre Dame at 14. You're going to have one
yeah.
pick at 14 and one at 45. You're going to have the safety. You're going to have the center. And you're going to get Ojabo.
Yeah.
Now, if I would have said that to him at the Senior Bowl, let's say, or before Ojabo got injured at any point, if
right.
I would have said, you're going to get those three players, he might have said, what do I have to give up, Hollywood Brown?
Right.
But that's an amazing thing. And you mentioned the not trading back part. And this is an Eric thing that came out in the aftermath that in the 2 years of COVID, they really thought that picks 80 to 120 in this yeah. draft were more valuable than any other draft because of the seasoning that those players would have, that they may have looked like late ones, early twos, or maybe more desirable than what you're going to see at pick 160 next year.
Yep.
And I'll let you be the judge on that. But that was probably the reason they took all those players.
Yeah. I think there was this, you know, there was this obvious narrative going on. You heard it, you know, I mean, I've maybe even repeated it, but I mean, it was a bad draft. That's what you were told. It was a bad draft. Well, no, it wasn't a bad draft. What it was a different kind of draft. It was technically the deepest draft in NFL history. because of the COVID factor, because of the number of kids who came back to school. You know, the FCS players, a lot of them had their seasons canceled. Or they went to the spring, and you know, there was just
draft because he wasn't a quarterback.
Right. That's where everybody was starting with it. Oh, you know, Kenny Pickett's not that good. Malik Willis, the project. Right. And they, those may be true statements, right? I mean, I can't dispute it to that point, but I will say that, you know, I think the day three picks, if we just strictly look at rounds 4 through 7 and then the undrafted crop, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now, whatever, and weigh it against previous years, we may be shocked at how many values and how many solid to maybe even very good players ended up in that range. And, you know, there were a lot of medical situations this year that were tricky, you know, to evaluate, and some players go on undrafted for that. But throwing that aside, you know, Ojabo would certainly be in that mix. But I mean, I really think it's going to end up being a very fruitful area of the draft because it did lack superstars. It did lack a quarterback class that we can be proud of. But overall, I think it was really deep, and a lot of players came out this year that you know, decided in 2021, I better hang on another year. So yeah, I think that effect is real.
We did have Ed Reed around here. We did have Matt Burke around here. We did have Marshall Yonder around here. Boy, not sexy at all till they leave, and then you got to go replace them, right? I mean, Polamalu in Pittsburgh, they're still figuring that out the same way we're trying to figure it out. The center position here, when Burke left, Flacco kind of didn't have that. The running game didn't have that. Flacco didn't have confidence. Then Flacco got hurt. Like all of what happened after you lose the guy yelling out who's the mic and the guy who's going to, as we found out here when Matt Skura had snapping problems to Lamar Jackson, that it's pretty integral. Now, that being said, no one ever takes a safety in the first round and feels good about it. No one ever takes a center in the first round. I remember going back to Steve Everett here a million years ago. And I would just say this, for what you do in evaluating these guys, where do they sit on you're the best one to ask because you've looked at 30 drafts, right? Like, where do they sit in regard to other safeties and other centers that would put them at this kind of value? And certainly to the Ravens, there is no invaluable safety. They just gave $80 million, $90 million to another one, right? Same thing with the center position where they didn't give Bozeman the money because they weren't in love with him. But falling in love with a center in the first round and trading away a wide receiver with 90 catches, you know, there's some head scratching going on here around among some fans about that.
I don't hate it because I feel like even though it's fair to point out that safety and center are likely, you know, for most teams anyway, closer to the bottom in terms of positional rankings, right? Quarterback at the top, corner, edge rusher, tackle, whatever, you know, running back, tight end, safety, guard, center. Those are all going to be towards the bottom a little bit. Even linebacker for some teams. But I mean, if you can get the best safety, the best center, the best punter, I think, or, you know, it was certainly an argument there, but
I think
the best.
That for sure. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And feel like the second best, maybe one technique in Travis Jones, really. You know, I mean, there was just so many things to like about it. So even if you argue that those are a little bit farther down the food chain, I still thought it was really worth it. I'll tell you a quick funny story, and maybe you guys have been repeating it for 3 days and I don't know, but at the NFL Combine, you know, the NFL, you've been there a million times, but they have those GM, you know, platforms where they all talk for 15 minutes. They don't say anything. Well, Eric DaCosta did say something, and I had been listening to some other GM, I honestly forget who, and Eric was kind of wrapping up, and I thought I'd walk by and, you know, just see if I could slip in a question or at least hear what he had to say. And I literally walked in as he was saying, yeah, we think Tyler Linderbaum is a tremendous prospect. We compare him a lot to Marshall Yonda. We think he's going to be an absolute star. I mean, he was basically telling us who he was going to pick on March 1st or whatever it was. And I just found that to be fascinating. I really did. I was like, wow, okay, maybe this is a smokescreen. No, it ended up being true. And so I love it when teams can just sort of say, here's the plan and here's what we're doing. So it was just really interesting to look back and remember that moment because he didn't hide his appreciation for Tyler Linderbaum. It was almost as if we'd all kind of moved on by that point.
Well, in the after, by the way, Eric Edholm is here from Yahoo Sports. So you can find him out on Twitter amongst other places. I like having him on so I can say Yahoo. Makes me think of drinking a Yoo-Hoo. Sounds chocolatey and nutty and delicious. the picks themselves, we'll get to them in a minute, because I do want to go one by one and not have you tell me how rangy Kyle Hamilton is, but more about what you're seeing. But the trade of Hollywood Brown, you know, you recruited him along with the rest of us a couple years ago, right? And yeah, he was the apple's eye, and they brought him in. They moved him around to get 90 balls. But disgruntled, the cousin issue, the swiping of social, the fact that they just basically rented him for 3 years at a first round pick and then traded it in and got another first round pick.
Yeah.
Not often you can do that, but not often teams are going to, you know, they would say, pound on it, dude, go play your position is what Parcells would say. Not, yeah, I'm going to let you out of here. There's a whole new thing going on here. And I had the kid Tomlin when I was at the owner's meetings, by the way, missed you there, but I was at the owner's meetings and I was out on the veranda with Tomlin and a bunch of the, Steelers beat writers, and we're having a couple of pops and laughing a little bit, and Mike's loose, and we went through our favorite Tomlinisms. My favorite is we want volunteers, not hostages. And in the case of Hollywood Brown, disgruntled is, you know, goodbye, but to get value and to keep it under wraps and to have it evaluated as part of the draft, because if you're going to talk about Linderbaum, you have to talk about Hollywood Brown, because that's the deal, right?
Yep, absolutely. And you know, like you said, it's part of kind of a bigger sweeping movement around the NFL, which is half the teams are saying, yeah, we'll pay for a wide receiver. Look at what the Jaguars paid for Christian Kirk, or look what, you know, any of the contracts that were doled out over a certain dollar amount where you say, ooh, you know, all of a sudden we have what, 10, 11 receivers averaging more than $20 million a year, which is, you know, roughly 10% of the cap. And, you know, teams like Kansas City and Green Bay decided, well, we can't have a high paid quarterback and a high paid elite receiver, because those two things are going to take up a, you know, an outsized percentage of our salary cap to the point where it's going to cripple other positions. So, yeah, there's always a tie in for what one player makes to what you can do everywhere else. And I just don't think the Ravens were ever prepared to give him that second contract. So trading him at the same roughly the same price as what the Eagles paid for AJ Brown, I think it's, I don't want to say highway robbery, but I think it was absolutely a deal they had to make. I mean, you've got Bateman waiting in the wings. You know, we're still waiting to see what, you know, Duvernay and Prochet and guys like that can maybe do. And, you know, I mean, obviously they brought in a lot of, I think they brought in like 5 undrafted receivers this year. So they're clearly carpet bombing the position, but at the same time, you know, Tylan Wallace, I forget about him, like last year's what, third or fourth round pick. So they have bodies there. And I think they always sort of had a vision of, well, we got to move them at some point. And it just surprised me that it happened kind of the way it did on the clock on Thursday night and in a wild 90 minute span during that was the most exciting, you know, portion of the draft, was that middle third of round one when everything was going down.
Well, and the quarterback's not coming off the board, and the wide receivers and the cornerbacks having the run. So let's go to this. Let's play this out. You're watching the draft. I'm watching John Mayer. I'm drinking beer. You're drinking water
and coffee, you
know, coffee, whatever you're doing. The picks start coming off the board, and I'm literally, I was at the United Center at the Goose Island Bar watching.
Oh, yeah.
I was on the clock. I was doing it all. You know, the beer wasn't cheap, but the girls were pretty and the music was good. But the Hamilton thing, the more it started to fall that he was going to be the odd man out, the safety that was going to be sitting there for them, where did you have him number ranked on your board?
I think either 2 or 3. I'd have to go
two
back and look. Yeah.
So you think he could go to the Hall of Fame? I mean, no offense. That's what that says to me. That says to me, as Hall of Fame talent, if you're picking top 5 in a draft, not that you're going to go to the Hall of Fame, but the great, a 10, 12, 15 year career is expected out of you. And
yeah, typically,
at a high level.
Yeah. I mean, yes. In a typical year, right. If you're a top 5 pick, right, you should be a Pro Bowl level talent. Now this year, I think I gave out, I have a grading scale. I don't want to get too into it. I don't want to bore people, but like basically over a 7.0 for my grading scale, which is one that teams used more.
I'm very familiar with that. It's a Phil Savage scale. It was a Newsom scale. Yeah.
Very, it's like the old school scale, right? Exactly. I haven't really modernized my system yet. And I wanted, if I ever do it, I'll have to get some hand holding on there, but it's kind of what I learned a decade or more ago. And I have the sort of basic feel for it, but anyway, over 7 essentially is a Pro Bowl, future Pro Bowl player. I think the highest grade I gave out was a 6.85. So basically what I'm saying is, of course there will be Pro Bowlers from this class. Every class has at least one Pro Bowler. There's no draft class in NFL history that hasn't produced a single Pro Bowler. I'm saying that out of my you know what, but I know that's true, right? But the point is, like, I did not love the top 15 this year compared to last year's top 15. I did not even love it compared to 2 years ago. So it was unusually light at the top, but Kyle Hamilton, regardless of positional importance, was one of the best players relative to his position, if that makes sense. So yeah, I think he has a chance to be a top three or four safety in the league. You know, that's how I would say it. So he was very, very, very close to that 7.0 grade. So yeah, maybe a little less. Like in a normal year, I might have ranked him 7th, 8th, 9th. You know, I said that about Hutchinson too. I would have put him, you know, 6th through 8th in a normal year, maybe. But yeah, I have a great amount of appreciation for him, even if, yeah, you'd love to see a guy run a little bit better than he did, but I've watched the tape and his instincts are so good. It helps make up for that lack of elite speed there.
We talked about Linderbaum a little bit. Eric at home from Yahoo joining us here. Please follow him and go check out all of his post-draft grades, including the ones for the Bengals and the Browns and the Steelers. For you with the rest of the draft, as this thing worked out after the trade, after the two first rounders, all that excitement, they get the nose tackle, they get Ajabo, and I want you to talk about that. Then the run of the fourth round guys and the fact that they got beaten to a wide receiver that they wanted, and we'll be following that kid now, right? You know, that never has a pick 119 ever meant so much or whatever that number was for him. But in the course of all this, they picked good players, and they picked players that guys like you that study 300 players, not guys on the internet that try to mock the first round and figure out who the top 50 players are. But once you get down to that level, I've been 27 years of doing this. This is reason I used to go drink beer and get crab cakes and ice cream with Ron Marcinak and TJ McCrate and all those guys back in the day, was to learn about these fourth and fifth and sixth round picks that around here have turned into Adalys Thomas, around here have turned into Matt Judon, around here have turned into Marshall Yanda. You already referenced Ed Dixon, but how about Dennis Pitta? How about what's going on with Mark Andrews
now? Andrews,
So all of these guys that are there, not all these guys are going to be that guy, but you like these picks. Most people did. You said you had a hard time having a pick that you didn't like. You liked the players.
I did. Yeah, I think you're right about that too. I feel like, you know, obviously you can screw up a draft by messing up your first or second round picks, right? I mean, we've seen it time and time again. But I think where you can really kind of get the jump on the competition is nailing those third, fourth, fifth round picks. And, you know, it could be a barren wasteland for some people. Like they either have too big a board and are kind of confused by which direction they should go, or they have too small a board and don't have enough players to pick from. And that, you know, that finding that sweet spot, I think, is important. So yeah, it was like they just played whack-a-mole with, you know, value and needs. Like, all right, hey, here comes, we didn't get Jordan Davis that everybody thought we were going to get. Travis Jones is about, you know, 85-90% of the prospect he is. Let's grab him at the 76th pick. That's value. You know, Daniel Fa'alele, the player that everyone mocked to the Ravens, they let him get him at what, 110th or something overall. So, you know, this is a player that I think most people thought would go in the top 100. I had him, you know, in the back end of my top 100. I wasn't as enamored with him as everybody else, but in the fourth round, oh, sure, I'm going to take the largest tackle in NFL history who made tangible strides every single year. Like, he looked pretty raw early in his career at Minnesota. And then the next year, not bad, you know, and just on and on and on. So, you know, the punter thing may be debated, but boy, if you watch Jordan Stout kick the ball, I don't want to say he's, you know, the greatest punter ever, but I really like what he does. I think he's a great directional punter with a quick get off and good control and power. I mean, he's really got the whole package. Matt Areza can kill the ball, but I thought Jordan Stout was a little bit more of a, you know, his short game, I think, was really good, if you want to use a golfing term. But
well, I mean, for those of us who've watched Sam Cook do this, sometimes it's not very impressive until it is. If you go back and watch the Super Bowl tape, go watch his punting in the biggest game of his career, and 9 years later, at 40 years old, still throwing passes. I mean, Sam's an athlete, and I can imagine this is pretty offensive to Sam to some degree, but also for the team to say value. This is how much we value our punter. And more than that, we like our kicker kicking 66-yard field goals. We have to have a holder who's a real holder. So there's a real value in that, and I can hear Bishotti saying, that's points. Hey, you know, every time the ball is snapped, that's points. We need to have a punter who is never going to screw that up, for a kicker who almost never screws up. So all of this perfection in special teams, and I think this goes back to Harbaugh and Randy Brown and the emphasis this organization puts on that, to say, we're going to take a punter. Even if we only have one fourth round pick, we might take a punter, because we value a punter more than a scat receiver that the Steelers took. And there was conjecture here about, well, which one would you rather have? And I'm like, you know, you don't mention punters or kickers until you don't have one. And we've been really, we haven't had a lot of coaches around here. We haven't had a lot of kickers. Right. We haven't had a lot of punters in this organization.
Yep. And you make an excellent point about having Justin Tucker. If you're going to have the best kicker in the league and you're going to invest heavily relative to that position in him, you have to have the long snapper and the holder to match, right? You can't have the first 2/3 of the operation screwed up before it gets to the closer, right? So that's an important element of it that I think probably gets overlooked. And, you know, Kyle Hamilton was used as a gunner at Notre Dame and was really good at it, right? He made plays in that regard. So, you know, Charlie Kohler, I think, is going to be a really good special teams player for him. Tyler Beatty could end up as a punt returner. I mean, he was a really good back at Missouri. That's my alma mater. I'm biased on that one, but I mean, I think you guys will be blown away at how good he is. I did not imagine him slipping to 196. I thought somewhere closer to the, you know, 125 to 150 range was his sweet spot, but the backs got pushed down a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I could envision Damarian Williams being a special teams gem, right? I mean, there's not a whole lot of imagination stretching with him. He was one of our all juice team members, and I'm going to give you a little selfish plug here. Therese Paylor, our colleague, passed away in 2021, and he did this all juice team every year. It was effort, performance, attitude. That was the makeup of the team. And Damarian Williams' teammate, Marcus Jones, was drafted, I think, 90-something by the Patriots. And I even said in there, look, Jones is considered the better NFL prospect, but there's something about this kid Williams. He competes his tail off. He's got that attitude of I don't care how big I or small I am. I'm going to go up there and battle every receiver I go up against. He's got that special teams value too. He's just a gritty player. I think will, you know, be a Raven from the day he walks in the building. Maybe he gets cut. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing with late fourth round picks. They're not guaranteed to make the roster, especially when you draft four of them, but he's one to root for. I think they, you know, again, it was another pick that I was just like, well, you know, we keep playing the hits here, and I can't argue with any of them.
Every time the Ravens would pick a player off the board, it wasn't just you. It's everyone consensusly loves what the only knock on them all week, Tanier gave them a B because they traded away their wide receiver and they have a hole. And it's on a year where they've had so many injuries, Eric, right? Like the training room, and how many of Ronnie Stanley, Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, Reddick, let's just go through the list of all these backs, injured guys. Bowser had Achilles at the end of the year. So all of these injuries that happen, or was it ACL? Either way, but at the end of the year, the infirmary, we have no idea how this popcorn machine is going to work out in August. And if every one of these guys is upright and healthy, and then they'll look the way they should have looked last year, which Harbaugh still apologized. I mean, they're in a 6-game losing streak right now. That really pisses those folks off over there. They don't like that for 9 months, you know?
Yeah.
And they're almost apologetic about how it turned out last year because they had so many injuries. So feeling this thing as a full puzzle, to your point, there are going to be guys getting cut because if everybody comes back healthy, there's going to be some pretty stiff competition on that O-line and the linebacking core now if they, you know, wants a job. So I would, and in the secondary where they were just ravaged last year, and then in the offseason lost Averett and let guys just go because they felt like they needed fresh blood.
Yep. And that's why the Ojabo pick is so inspiring. Is okay. Not only did you, you know, I think get him at a very reasonable spot, 40 something, whatever overall. I mean, 45. Right. So I thought there was a chance he could go in that 10 pick span between like 30 and 40, you know, very end of round one, early round two, he slips a little past that, they get him. And he's a pupless candidate. There's no question about it. He may end up having a redshirt type year, but that's fine. That's exactly what you do when you have all these picks and you're expecting players back from injury. And it's not going to be, you know, I mean, it's maybe not the most loaded roster in the NFL, but it's certainly top 5 or 10, you know? And so in terms of just depth and now, and yeah, so I think it all fits together. You're right. I mean, I have a feeling people are going to overlook the Ravens this year because they have forgotten that they started 8-3, even with the injuries at that point, which were on, you know, DEFCON 2, I think. And then it got to 1, right? So clearly they've got a team that is built to win, I think. The question of Lamar and everything, is it in the back of my mind? Is it concerning for the long term? Absolutely, right? But I think they'll figure that out. You never know. Lamar seems like a little bit of a wild card. No agent, you know, kind of not seemingly wanting to get these contract talks going. But once they start playing football, I think that gets kind of pushed to the side. And you remember, oh, yeah, they've got a really good coach. I'm shocked they obviously made a change on the defensive side. But still, you know, the staff is impressive. The roster looks good. I think they're going to win some games next year, no doubt about it.
There are 31 other teams in the league. Eric Edholm is here from Yahoo Sports. Anything to say about the rest of them to wrap up this great chat? And I hope we get together at some point over a beverage and some pizza out there in Illinois. But, the draft has become so overwrought. And you know, my wife and I looked up at State Fair the other day, and they're in front of the fountains on Saturday morning. We're like, what is this? But in the end, for football people, it's the most important weekend of the year. For the Rams to win a championship, print shirts about we don't need the draft and like all of that, they certainly don't feel that way here. And as I think we put rosters together now and years and 4-year deals and 5-year deals and, and salary cap and where they're going to be with Lamar at 40, 45 million down the line, the Ravens do a nice job, but the league is, everybody thinks they did a nice job this weekend. Everybody's patting themselves on the back.
Yeah. And you brought up the Rams thing. I think that's really interesting launching point there, because it's like, you know, the draft means different things to different teams. They view it differently. The Rams view these draft picks as capital, right? Like they can use them to get acquire players for, you know, Von Miller helps them win a Super Bowl. They don't re-sign them. Is that a sunk cost? Yeah. Did they also win the Super Bowl? Yeah. You know, so, you know, it's on the one hand, it's tough. On the other hand, you go, well, we've got a ring to show for it. So, yeah, I mean, like the draft and develop teams have their pattern and they do it a different way. The Bengals took a far different approach. They don't really trade up or down that much. And, you know, they have a small scouting staff, but they've quietly put together some nice drafts. You know, Pittsburgh has its way of doing things. And how will that change when, you know, I assume Omar Khan's going to take over for Kevin Colbert. I don't know that for sure, but I think that's the direction they go. Will it be a different approach that way? These are all fascinating approach, you know. I like Chip Kelly once had a great quote. He said, you can be what you want to be. And he was talking about as a coach and a football team, but I believe as a scouting staff too, that's a big part of it. And like, we can decide what vision we want to take. And if we commit to it and are, you know, have a better than average hit rate, we can be successful doing it. So the Rams can be successful. The Ravens, even the Patriots with their unusual approach to the draft, Seattle, et cetera. There's no one right way to do it. That's why I love the draft. So yes, it is sometimes false hope, fault, you know, fool's goal, whatever you want to say, but I love it from an analytical approach of how are these teams trying to, what's the vision here? And then I kind of crack it, reverse engineer it that way.
Eric Edholm, reverse engineering things out at Yahoo Sports. You can go find him out there and out on Twitter. A great follow for all things football. We all go to sleep now, right? I mean, now they're going to release the schedule or international games or mini camps or jurisprudence will be involved and Dan Snyder's going to get indicted. You know, like all of this is going to happen and they're finally going to kick a football. It's 5 more months before they even kick the football, dude.
I mean, it's crazy, right? Like we'll have plenty to talk about, but the itch does arrive at some point. You can see my eye, but you know, my bags under my eyes. If I'm tired now, we still have a busy month here coming up. I mean, I don't want to see what I look like in June.
I don't want to see you on decaf, to be honest with you. all of our Wise Conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. And we appreciate our friend Eric stopping by. Hey, get some rest out there. Eat some pizza. Go watch some playoff hockey or do something. Take your eyes off the gridiron for a minute or two. All right.
I got McDavid last night. I was watching that game a little. I enjoyed that. I'll get some hockey this week.
I know you will. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. Doing all things post-draft. Don't forget, Luke's out there at Baltimore Luke as well. Tons of stuff out at BaltimorePositive.com.